Thank you. If it pleases the court, my name is Tom Crosby. I represent Philip Crosby, no relation. This is a state civil tort claim that was improperly removed to the federal court, claiming that there was a preemption based on 301A of the Labor Management Relation Act, which did not exist. I would like to apologize to the court for not more promptly bringing a motion to remand. I attacked the preemption argument by moving to strike the affirmative defense. Judge Steele thought that he deferred on that until he made what he thought was going to be some dispositive factual findings, which never materialized.
So I have a couple of questions about this. I mean, the first is, once the case is removed from the state court to the federal court, the federal court obviously has an independent obligation to assess its jurisdiction, you know, if it realizes that there's a jurisdictional problem, or, you know, maybe it kicks up here. But in assessing jurisdiction, especially in this messy area that we call complete preemption, the judge isn't limited, is he, to the allegations on the face of the well-pleaded complaint? Isn't the judge entitled to look at relevant jurisdictional facts, and wouldn't those include here that grievance settlement in which Mr. Crosby agrees to drop his claim in exchange for a favorable record on termination and his vacation pay and the other things?
If I understand your question,
well, here's the point. If you look only at the complaint that you filed in the state court, that doesn't have a peep about the grievance settlement. It just
Correct.
Talks about the wrongful discharge theory, the workers' comp thing. But it turns out that the plot is more complicated than that, that there is this theory that you have of wrongful discharge, but there's also this arrangement between Mr. Crosby and the company for the terms of his, I'll just use a neutral word, his departure from the company. And when you look at that, all of a sudden you're thinking about the collective bargaining agreement, you're thinking about the resolution of the more limited grievance, the three-day suspension grievance, but the resolution winds up setting the terms of his departure from the company. So it seems difficult to me to look at the case as a whole without recognizing the important part that the settlement agreement plays.
If I understand your question, I do not believe that in this case, as in Lingle and its progeny, including Bettis, that there need be any interpretation of collective bargaining agreement.
Well, if he had...
Look, do you yeah. rely on the settlement? Is that part of your case?
No.
So you're saying it's just defense? It's just their defense?
It's an affirmative.
You don't
defense.
Rely on it?
Do not.
Is there anything in the collective bargaining agreement that you rely on for
no.
your claim? It's just retaliation for workers' compensation.
Correct.
But he got benefits under the settlement, and so I'm a little confused how he can retain those benefits under the settlement,
Let's
but then say, but I'm actually not going to use the settlement any other way. He gets the layoff status and the neutral recommendation, the vacation pay, and he's not really trying to undo the settlement, as I understand it.
I think we first have to define what the settlement was and what it pertained to. There was no question in this case that there was a statement that the employer was going to discharge Mr. Crosby.
It's this thing here on page 824, right, of your separate appendix. That was what I understood the settlement.
823, 24, the September...
September 22.
Right. Drafted by the employer. It mixes a couple issues. It says in the first instance that there would be a voluntary separation by a permanent layoff, which seems to be a contradiction in terms.
Wait a second.
But that's favorable.
Is this would the outcome of this, would the outcome of the case affect the settlement? Is the settlement somehow at jeopardy here?
No.
So whatever he gets on the is whatever he gets from the settlement something he keeps, and you're just seeking more on top of it, or what? Or is what you're seeking going to require modification of the settlement?
There's no, the settlement plays no role in the tort, Judge.
No, but I'd like a more direct answer.
All right.
Will the outcome of this case affect any rights that your client has under the settlement?
No.
I'm very mixed up. Isn't this suit effectively a collateral attack on the terms of
No.
the settlement, to the extent you want to show that his separation from the company was involuntary rather than voluntary?
That goes directly to the Illinois Supreme Court has addressed that in the Hinthorn case. This is not a question of whether or not it's a voluntary or an involuntary separation. There's no question it's an involuntary separation. It's an issue of labeling.
Except that he says it's voluntary in the settlement.
Voluntary permanent layoff. How does someone permanently lay himself off?
Well,
because he gets neutral employment references. He gets workers, or unemployment compensation. I mean, there are benefits to its not being labeled, we terminated you for cause.
And that's correct. But it has nothing to do with the determination of whether there was retaliatory or discharge.
But
the issue is, was there a discharge? The answer is yes. The labeling is beneficial to him. Same thing happened in Hinthorn. The plaintiff there in the retaliatory discharge claim signed a voluntary resignation form after being told she was costing the company too much and she was going to be fired. The Supreme Court said by virtue of that, she got a benefit, and that was a clean resume with no discharge. Here, that same benefit has been an inures to my client, but it has nothing to do with the issue of whether he has been discharged. And when we talk about settling, what are we settling here?
But look,
if, as
you say, he was effectively coerced into signing the settlement, why not bring a hybrid 301 breach of fiduciary claim saying this wasn't a voluntary agreement at all and it shouldn't bind him?
Because this is a retaliatory discharge case, Judge, based on the fact that the discharge was motivated by the employer's animus and deliberate attempt, as the vice president of operations said, to send a hard message. On the day that my client's finger was amputated and he was on the way, he was still at the hospital.
If you didn't have to agree, this settlement, then he would have been free to make that claim under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act, and the claim wouldn't require any interpretation of the collective bargaining.
There is no interpretation of collective bargaining agreement here. This settlement dismisses a grievance, but the grievance has nothing to do with the termination.
So what is the only relief you're seeking, monetary?
Correct.
So you're not seeking an injunction that would, restore him or change his voluntary separation to involuntary or anything like
Correct.
That?
Correct.
It goes back to my original question, whether this suit has any implications at all for the settlement. You're saying no.
I'm saying no, Judge. The company wanted the grievance, which had to do with a three-day suspension. And the company tries to expand what that grievance was. When he came back to work, he was immediately suspended without pay for 3 days. That happened on September 13th. On September 13th, a grievance was filed. On September 16th, a different action was taken by the company in order to short-circuit their protocol for progressive discipline, and that was a last-chance agreement was issued to him. There was no grievance on that, but you'll notice throughout the employer's briefs, they try and bootstrap that back. The only thing that was dismissed was a claim that my client had for 3 days of lost pay. He dismissed that. It had nothing to do with his discharge.
Save your time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. LeMoyne.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I think this case is completely about the grievance settlement agreement.
Boy, I sure don't understand that. I mean, what if he signs this on September 22nd, 2010. So suppose he signs it, he gets up, he walks out of the room and he trips, and he sues the company for negligence. You know, their floors were slippery or sloped or something like that. Would you still be arguing that the case had arisen under the collective bargaining agreement?
I don't think so.
Then what's the difference?
Well, the entire reason that he separated from the company is contained within the grievance settlement agreement.
Well, so what? The entire reason he was that he had to walk out the room and tripped, in my example, is that he signed the settlement agreement.
I agree, but I think
so
that...
what's the difference?
Well, I think the difference is...
you're saying there's some causal relation. But that doesn't mean that anything to do with the collective bargaining agreement is going to be an issue litigated in his retaliation suit.
Well, I think the issue is discharge. He's got to prove discharge. And in proving discharge, you have to look at the circumstances leading up to that grievance settlement agreement, in which it says there's a voluntary separation.
That's true, but I don't see what that has to do with the collective bargaining agreement.
Well, the grievance settlement itself has to do with the collective bargaining agreement.
But the fact is that he was discharged. And he says this is retaliation and he's entitled to monetary relief. I don't see why litigating that issue, why was he discharged? I don't know what that has to do with the collective bargaining agreement.
Well,
another way of looking at it is this settlement takes as a given that he's discharged, and what he's trying to sue about now is, in a sense, why. This is just saying it's voluntary discharge, there's going to be his accrued vacation, neutral employment references, but he's still discharged, and he's saying, I shouldn't have been discharged to begin with. There's nothing about why he was discharged in this settlement agreement.
And on top of that, is it consistent to characterize someone's departure as both a voluntary separation and a permanent layoff, as this settlement did? I mean, like, why was it necessary to say that he's departing voluntarily if ultimately the agreement was to characterize his departure as a permanent layoff with no right of recall? I just can't, you know, put it together.
So that he could claim unemployment benefits and characterize the separation, which was voluntary, as a permanent layoff to the Illinois Department of Employment Security. In other words,
it's obvious what the benefit to him is from this, and you're hanging your hat on voluntary separation, but the company is telling him the door is locked. You know, you're not coming back. It's a permanent layoff without recall rights. And he's agreeing, you know, to this permanent divorce, if you will.
But I think that the company telling the union that the door is locked, which is what Judge Steele said had happened, and the union going to Mr. Crosby and saying the door is locked, this is the only way we can help you, all of that is within the context of that grievance settlement.
And why is it something that goes to the original reason why he's been put in this position, which is what he's trying to argue about now. Now he's saying, given the fact that I'm in this position, I think you had an unlawful reason under the Illinois Workers' Compensation statute for putting me there. I've accepted the consequences. I'm not trying to come back. You know, I'm leaving alone everything that had anything to do with this grievance process under the CBA, but you shouldn't have put me there.
I guess the reason that I believe that this case is unique and should be preempted is because all of those facts with respect to putting him there led to this grievance settlement agreement where there's a voluntary separation, and he says, yes, that's consistent with what I agreed to.
Well, what is the basis for the complete preemption in these labor cases?
The basis for complete preemption? Well, the basis for complete preemption in these types of cases is we want a consistent and uniform adjudication of these types of issues
right.
that deal with.
Right. Right. We want the federal court, for historical reasons, federal courts to have a monopoly of interpretation of collective bargaining agreements.
Right.
But there's no issue in this litigation of the interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement.
Well, it's not just the interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement, though. It's also the interpretation of any labor contract, and specifically...
I know, and that's not involved here either.
Well, I don't know how you can separate...
What labor contract is being interpreted that Mr. Crosby has to get interpreted in order to prevail?
The grievance settlement agreement.
You're saying
why? What is he going to do with it? He said he's not doing anything with the grievance settlement. He's just arguing retaliation. Why does he have to get enmeshed in the grievance settlement?
Because he must prove discharge.
He must prove
discharge is obvious. The only answer you could possibly give is that the settlement agreement, if the retaliatory discharge issue had been thrown into the hopper, might have included a payment to him as well, and it didn't. It's just you're gone and we'll all be neutral. But then there is this reservation of some rights at the end even of the grievance settlement without prejudice to the contractual rights of either party, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean, but it seems to be reserving some things.
We tend to put that at the end of all of the grievance settlements, so there's no...
Well, maybe you should think about what you mean.
I don't know why, but everybody has been doing it for a long time. But my point is, the discharge has to be involuntary. We can't get around the settlement agreement and deal with that element of his claim.
Well, but Mr. Crosby cited an Illinois Supreme Court case that said the label isn't dispositive.
Well, the Hinthorn case didn't involve a collective bargaining agreement. The Hinthorn case involves a person who's sitting across from her boss, and the boss says, you're going to be fired, so you have to resign.
But why does CBA or not matter to the issue whether the label needs to be slavishly followed or whether you can look at the substance?
Well, in Illinois, with respect to that wrongful discharge claim, the label does matter because there is no constructive discharge theory under Illinois law for a wrongful discharge claim. And so in this case, the label...
So that'll be his problem once he gets to the Illinois State Court.
Yes. But, again, in order to get there, he has to go through this grievance settlement agreement.
What is the dispute that you would have with him over whether his separation was... whether he was fired?
My dispute would be that by the union negotiating this agreement, the employer never took an action to discharge him. That separation or departure, as you put it, occurred in the grievance settlement agreement itself.
So he left of his own free will as far as the company was concerned, and the company suffers some detriment from that. They've got to whatever extent their unemployment insurance has experiential rating, they get something on that point, and they're hoping that detriment's enough to buy some peace.
Agreed.
So you interpret this settlement agreement to mean that he left voluntarily?
Yes.
Is that your idea?
Because it was... I understand why you're...
He says his voluntary separation shall be considered a permanent layoff.
Right.
He's fired.
It doesn't sound like a voluntary separation.
Well, but
he
it's
was fired.
A layoff is it's discharge, right?
Well, and listen, I'm not going to argue...
It's a discharge.
I would...
Permanent layoff is a discharge. This says what happened to him was a permanent discharge. So how is this going to be an issue in the litigation? You're going to say, "Oh, permanent layoff, that's nothing. That's voluntary."
No, I'm going to say that the voluntary separation language is the key there.
You're
going
to try to argue that he quit.
Voluntary separation is defined as a permanent layoff.
It says
what do you do with that?
Well, it's an issue that I'm definitely going to have to deal with. I agree
with
that.
How are you going to deal with it?
Well, I'm going to state that there was a voluntary separation that was negotiated that they considered to be a permanent layoff so that he could receive unemployment benefits. Those are the facts.
Well, unless they were being dishonest, they were saying you're never coming back. This is permanent.
Yes.
That sounds involuntary.
I agree with you that this entire situation that led to the settlement agreement, there was likely pressure put on him. Okay? I admit it because
like being fired before he walked in?
Well, again, I don't think he was ever fired, though. That's the point. Had they fired him, such as in Lingle, and then he filed the work comp retaliation lawsuit, that would be different. That's what Judge Steele said. But in this case, the employer never fired him. They negotiated the end of his employment.
So in other words, the settlement agreement is some gimmick for keeping this keeping this under federal in a federal court.
I don't believe they ever thought of it.
Well, it looks phony, right?
I don't know that it's phony.
Well, I don't understand defining a voluntary separation as a permanent layoff as having as that's either gibberish or it's saying this is you're fired, never come back.
Maybe Mr. Crosby can tell us if he thinks he was fired.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Lemoyne. So, Mr. Crosby, do you have anything further?
Hey, Judge.
Can you tell us if he was fired quickly?
He was fired. If you look at the declaration of Mr. Zimmerman, which is found in the appendix at A43, he states that prior to coming to this arrangement for the permanent layoff so he could get unemployment and have a neutral job reference, he was fired. That the plant manager said, I am going to fire him for violation of the last chance agreement, period. So he's fired. Then this is all cooked up. Now, even Judge Steele said that there was no grievance involved here. In his order, he said that Mr. Crosby decided to settle his termination issues outside of the grievance process. There is no preemption here. The district court didn't rely on preemption. They tried to adopt an affirmative defense that he can't now say that it was involuntary, which is flies directly in the face of Hinthorn. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Crosby and Mr. Lemoyne, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow. That's a little ominous.
The end.